Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, Donald Trump's takeover of the Republican National Committee is complete, and his hand-picked puppets that are now running the show began laying off dozens and dozens of RNC staffers this week. And I'm going to explain to you the very obvious of that, which is that is a very stupid idea when you're smack in the middle of an election year. Also, Lindsey Graham completely went to pieces during an interview with NBC host Kristen Welker this week when she asked him a very simple question about why Donald Trump is so cozy with fascist dictators. And Kellyanne Conway is getting heat from conservatives because of her new role as a lobbyist for TikTok. Of course, not officially, but Kellyanne has, of course, been going to members of Congress in recent weeks begging them to not pass legislation to ban the popular app. And Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow, he's got great new information for us that he's unveiling on Friday. But we've heard this song and dance before, so it's going to be real fun to watch. All that and much, much more coming up on this week's Ring of Fire. And don't forget, you can get the full show every week by signing up and becoming a member at rofpodcast.com. And for Ring of Fire every day of the week, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. You know, I had sincerely hoped that I was not going to have to utter the name George Santos again until either his idiotic lawsuit against Jimmy Kimmel was thrown out, or until his criminal trial began. But here we are in March, and it is with a heavy heart that I announce that George Santos has decided to once again run for Congress. In a recent announcement that he put on social media, the indicted George Santos, who was expelled from Congress, has said he is going to run and challenge Republican Congressman Nick LaLotta in New York's 1st Congressional District. So, of course, like Lauren Boebert, George Santos has decided, obviously I can't win in my home district, so I'm just going to move and hope that I can unseat an incumbent in my idiotic quest for more attention. Because that's 100% what this is. George Santos, I'll read his statement in a moment, but George Santos, let's be clear, has a 0% chance of winning any election anywhere at any time. I mean, he couldn't even be elected onto the board of a, you know, HOA at this point. But he's running. He's allegedly, according to reports, actually filed the paperwork to run. So here is how George Santos made his announcement to the world. After a lot of prayer and conversation with my friends and family, I have made a very important decision that will shake things up. Tonight, I want to announce that I will be returning to the arena of politics and challenging Nick for the battle over New York 1. I look forward to debating him on the issues and on his weak record as a Republican. The fight for our majority is imperative for the survival of the country. God bless you all, and we are off to the races, he said. Then later, he also had this to say. This was actually what he told reporters the night of the State of the Union last week. He said, New York hasn't had a real conservative representative represent them since I left office arbitrarily thanks to rhino empty suits like Nick LaLotta. He is willing to risk the future of our majority and the future of this country for his own political gain. He posted that on Twitter. But anyway, George Santos is running for office, which is probably going to be hard to do if you're in jail. Let's not forget the charges against George Santos added up altogether come with a roughly 25-year prison sentence, dude. Like, what do you think's going to happen? How are you not worried about your upcoming trial that I believe is, what, August, September sometime? Like, doesn't it seem like that ought to be priority number one, you know, prepping for trial, talking to prosecutors, trying to work out a plea deal maybe? Or do you already have one in the works? Ah, see, there's the wrinkle in things. George Santos seems very confident that he's not going to go to jail. So could it be that George Santos has secretly worked out this plea deal that may be revealed soon that would prevent him from going to jail and allow him to run for office? Perhaps. He had previously said that he was not going to take a plea deal, and then I think a couple months ago there were reports that maybe one is in the works. So it has not been reported, but that is something that could certainly shake things up a little bit. But even if that happens, a plea deal would force George Santos to plead guilty. So you would still be dealing with a guy who's guilty of massive fraud. And I don't think he would do very well in an election, especially against an incumbent Republican. But we're going to have to wait and see, because God bless George Santos wants that attention, and he'll do anything to get it. Kellyanne Conway has taken a break from her role trying to teach Republicans how to talk about women's reproductive health issues, and instead she has now become a lobbyist for TikTok. Not necessarily a registered lobbyist for TikTok, but according to a report from Politico, she is in fact being paid a hefty sum of money by the Club for Growth to lobby members of Congress to not pass the bill banning TikTok in the United States. And the report says that she has had at least 10 meetings with lawmakers begging them, please don't ban TikTok. And for this, Kellyanne Conway is getting absolutely demolished by her former allies on the right, including, by the way, one of her Fox News colleagues. Because Kellyanne Conway is a paid contributor for Fox News, and when this Politico story broke, she was trashed by Fox News host Mark Levin, who said in response to the article, "This is not just appalling and disappointing, it is shocking." Shocking, he says, that Kellyanne Conway would go to Congress and tell them don't ban TikTok. Now, another one, Steve Deese from The Blaze, had this to say. "In the end, the real reason we never drain the swamp or lock her up or throw the bums out or crash our own tea party and we just get manage the decline at an acceptable rate of speed or stop the crazy for a little while instead is because our people cash the check." Now, again, she is allegedly being paid by the Club for Growth to go and do this, and the founder, I guess, one of the investors of Club for Growth, excuse me, owns a 15% stake in TikTok. So it's not like this is an altruistic thing where Club for Growth is like, no, TikTok is a vital voice for millions of Americans. We need to save it. No, you have a financial stake in it. So you're sending Kellyanne Conway to DC to go and sweet talk people to see if you can get it not banned. Now, for the record, just so we're clear on things, I don't think TikTok should be banned. I think that is a very dangerous move if Congress can just pass bills, you know, however cleverly worded they are, to start banning certain companies from operating inside the United States. That is a slippery slope upon which we should never get on. I don't care if you love TikTok or hate TikTok, you have to admit that our government banning certain businesses from being able to operate in the United States? Oh, hell no, we do not need to go down that slope. Because it is a slope, and it will lead to other companies, entities, people being banned. And that is never a good thing. But at the same time, it is absolutely hilarious to watch Kellyanne Conway get fed to the wolves. All of these conservatives, and I, you know, only read you two, but there's lots of them on social media right now, super pissed at her, and it's hilarious. There can be no disagreement in the world of conservative politics. You go against them on one thing, even something as simple as standing up for the fact that 170 million Americans use TikTok as their form of freedom of speech. God forbid you go against conservatives, because as they're proving right now, they'll eat you alive for it. A very weird thing happened in Kansas last week, and I mean, that statement could really lend itself to pretty much anything. But this happened at a Johnson County Republican Party fundraiser event in the state of Kansas, where one of the vendors present at this event had one of those, you know, self-defense mannequins that people can punch and kick and do all kinds of things with. But they had dressed this little mannequin in a Let's Go Brandon shirt and put a President Joe Biden mask on it so that it looked like President Biden. And this vendor was allowing people to come up and just beat the living hell out of this effigy, the media is calling it, of President Biden. Now, the organizers of this Johnson County Republican fundraiser said, look, we had nothing to do with it. This was a local karate instructor. You know, they've got self-defense classes they were promoting. And so they had this thing out there. You know, we didn't have anything to do with it. And according to the reports, that is about the extent that the Johnson County Republican Party had with people beating the hell out of an effigy of President Biden. They didn't disavow it. They just said, well, hey, it wasn't us. It was just this person. We saw people doing it. There's videos and photographs of it all across social media. We knew it was happening. We just, you know, we didn't do it. So, you know, it's okay. Well, the former chair of the Johnson County Republican Party seems to think differently. And here is what the former chair of the Republican Party there, actually the former head of the Kansas Republican Party, not Johnson County, sorry, Mike Kuckelman, had this to say about the entire incident. This conduct is shameful and it is wrong. Brown and Holiday must resign. That's the current head of the Kansas GOP and the current head of the Johnson County GOP, Brown and Holiday. Republicans, especially elected Republicans, must demand the resignations of Brown and Holiday. Silence is complicity in this case. Others described it as, quote, a disgusting display designed to encourage political violence. Democratic State Senator Cindy Halscher said, as an elected official who has received dozens of threats over the past few years from Trump supporters via social media, as well as to my email and voicemail, I can't say I'm surprised by this display. This type of behavior is not only juvenile, but dangerous and has no place in politics or our society. This continuing growth of extremism in the GOP is why I left the party several years ago. The few remaining members with integrity have condemned these actions, yet sadly, they are the ones who keep getting pushed out of the party. Now, I agree with that statement. Not just about the normal Republicans getting pushed out of the party. Y'all should have seen what was happening to your party, you know, decades ago, honestly, so you kind of waited a little too long for me to agree with you on that. But this kind of political violence, like, this is what this sparks. There was no reason to do that. I'm sure you wanted the attention for your little booth because you're giving self-defense lessons and it's a Republican event, so let's have a Biden thing. You could have had your dummy next to, you know, some kind of Biden thing that people didn't touch. But imagine for a second the backlash, because this story is kind of a buried story. It's not something that you're seeing all over the media. But imagine if a local Democratic group had an effigy, you know, an image of Donald Trump that people were allowed to go up and spit on and punch and kick. That'd be national news. MSNBC would be condemning it. CNN would be condemning it. All of us would probably be condemning it. But it happens at a conservative thing. And granted, yeah, Johnson County Republican Party, not the national party, not even the state party. But crickets. And this is what sparks that political violence. But Republicans don't care, the media doesn't care, and this will probably be the last any of you even hear about this story, because that's how pathetic the media is. This past Friday, at Mar-a-Lago, at his home, Donald Trump hosted Hungarian Prime Minister, the authoritarian leader, Viktor Orbán. And this is not the first time, of course, that Donald Trump has been buddy-buddy with somebody that is effectively a despot, maybe even a dictator. We know that he has nothing but praise for Vladimir Putin. We know that he loves Kim Jong-un. He has, of course, been outspoken about Erdogan in Turkey as well. But his love of dictators, according to his former chief of staff, General John Kelly, goes far beyond the people that are just serving as dictators or authoritarian leaders today. And it goes all the way back, Kelly says in a new book, to Adolf Hitler himself. Now, this is not General Kelly's new book. This is actually CNN reporter Jim Sciutto's new book called The Return of Great Powers. But for his book, Mr. Sciutto did in fact interview General John Kelly about Donald Trump's love of dictators. And here is what John Kelly had to say. He said, "Well, but Hitler did some good things." I said, "Well, what?" And he said, "Well, Hitler rebuilt the economy." "But what did he do with that rebuilt economy? He turned it against his own people and against the world." And I said, "Sir, you can never say anything good about the guy. Nothing," Kelly recounted. "I mean, Mussolini was a great guy in comparison." It's pretty hard to believe he missed the Holocaust, though, and pretty hard to understand how he missed the 400,000 American GIs that were killed in the European theater, Kelly told me. But I think it's more, again, the tough guy thing. Trump's admiration for Hitler went further than the German leader's economic policies, according to Kelly. Trump also expressed admiration for Hitler's hold on senior Nazi officers. Trump lamented that Hitler, as Kelly recounted, maintained his senior staff's loyalty, while Trump himself often did not. "He would ask about the loyalty issues and about how, when I pointed out to him the German generals as a group were not loyal to him, and in fact tried to assassinate him a few times, and he didn't know that," Kelly recalled. "He truly believed when he brought us generals in that we would be loyal, that we would do anything he wanted us to do," Kelly told me. And as to the current dictators, here is what John Bolton, who of course served as an advisor to Donald Trump, John Bolton said about Trump. "He views himself as a big guy. He likes dealing with other big guys, and big guys like Erdogan and Turkey get to put people in jail and you don't have to ask anybody's permission. He kind of likes that." And then General Kelly added, "He's not a tough guy by any means, but in fact quite the opposite. But that's how he envisions himself." So just know that if we get a Donald Trump back in the White House, it'll be a Donald Trump that is not restrained. It'll be a Donald Trump that, as we all know, thanks to Project 2025, is going to pack the entire federal government, down to even the friggin' janitors, with people who will not tell him no. Every lawyer, every career civil servant, everybody at the DOJ, the CIA, the FBI, Homeland Security, and every cabinet and department in the government will be a spineless yes person to Donald Trump. Because that is the only thing he will tolerate in a second term. He learned from his mistakes the first time. He had people that would tell him no. He had people that would try to talk him down. And he's not going to do that again. He wants to be like those dictators because deep down he has this desperate need to be viewed as a big tough guy because, as Kelly points out, he's not a tough guy. He's a very weak and ineffective individual. And weak and ineffective people always crave that power because it's the only way they can feel big. So, if you weren't already scared enough about a potential Donald Trump second term, perhaps his admiration of Adolf Hitler is enough to make you at least a little bit more concerned than you were. Now that Donald Trump has his hand-picked puppets, Michael Whatley and his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, running the RNC, the two idiots have wasted no time in purging RNC staff. Starting late on Monday evening, dozens and dozens of RNC staffers and even some contractors were immediately let go after the first full day of Whatley and Trump's leadership. Now, what's interesting about this, of course, is the fact that we're in the middle of a presidential campaign. On top of that, we're also in the middle of an election year where Republicans, one, want to retain control of the House of Representatives, and two, want to regain control of the Senate. Now, I don't know about you, but if I were running any kind of organization and we had a very big contentious thing coming up where I needed all hands on deck, I would think that the dumbest decision possible would be to fire 60 people on my first day. But that is what Michael Whatley and Laura Trump did. And it's very obvious why they did it. They want people that are only loyal to Donald Trump, not people that are loyal to the Republican Party or people that are interested in winning elections, you know, the kinds of things you need when you're running one of the two largest political parties in the United States. But no, we can't have experienced people. We can't have people who know what they're doing in the Republican Party. God, no. That would be insane, wouldn't it, folks? So, one person with familiar with the situation described it as, quote, an absolute bloodbath. An absolute bloodbath at the RNC. Let me read you this. The firings are mainly to ensure that there is no overlap in roles between RNC and the Trump campaign. The Trump campaign, for instance, already has robust political and communications teams. They fire a bunch of those people. The firings are part of a strategy to ensure that only staffers committed to Trump and the MAGA movement are left at the RNC as Trump tightens his grip on the party ahead of the presidential election in November. That is from The Guardian, by the way. So, Trump tightens his grip on the Republican Party, and the first thing he does, he has Whatley and his daughter-in-law walk in and tell 60 people, you're fired. Yeah, I guess that's technically Trump's trademark there. But again, you're now going to be bringing in people who are not as experienced, who do not know what's going on. You're already in the middle of a race and you're changing drivers. I don't think I have the ability to convey to you how disastrous this is for the Republican Party. And yes, I'm almost laughing as I say this, because it's like the party is engaged in some weird form of self-immolation. That's what's happening here. They are killing themselves to appease Donald Trump. And they know they're doing it. They're willingly doing it. And all we can do is sit back and watch and laugh. So this week, Donald Trump made the horrible decision to go on CNBC and give an interview where Donald Trump openly and confusingly called for cuts to Social Security and Medicare. Now, before I read you Donald Trump's exact quote, let's not forget that it was a year ago this month that Donald Trump was out there calling out his Republican colleagues for wanting to cut Social Security and Medicare. Now, that, of course, overlooks the fact that Donald Trump did, in fact, call for cuts to those programs while he was president. But he had enough good sense a year ago to understand that that was a very stupid move for Republicans to make. And here we are 1 year later, Donald Trump goes on CNBC and says this. So first of all, there's a lot you can do in terms of entitlements, in terms of cutting, and in terms of also the theft and the bad management of entitlements. Tremendous bad management of entitlements. There's tremendous amounts of things and numbers of things you can do. So I don't necessarily agree with the statement. I know that they're going to end up weakening Social Security because the country is weak. And let's take a look at outside of the stock market. We're going through hell. People are going through hell. If they have, I believe the number is 50%. They say 32% and 33%. I believe we have a cumulative inflation of over 50%. That means people are, you know, they have to make more than 50% more over a fairly short period of time to stay up. They've gotten routed. You just made those numbers up. You're just like, they say 50, but some say 30, some say 32, 33. Maybe I think there's a 40 in there somewhere. Like, he's just making numbers up off the top of his head. But of course, that's all beside the point. The big point is that here he is literally saying there's room for cuts in Social Security and Medicare, what he calls entitlement programs. They're not entitlement programs, okay? You pay into these programs throughout your entire working life. They are yours. But most importantly, they are social safety net programs that have been hugely successful throughout their existence. And Donald Trump thinks he's going to win a presidential campaign with statements like this. Do you know what the largest demographic in the country is that votes Republican? Yeah, the elderly. Do you know what a huge number of elderly voters rely on to stay alive? Social Security and Medicare. Do you think those people, and to be honest, plenty of them will, don't get me wrong, But do you think a majority of those people are going to look at the guy saying, I want to reduce your monthly income? I want to reduce your healthcare benefits? Do you think people are honestly going to go to the polls and be like, I'm going to vote for the guy that says he's going to screw me over, who's very honest about screwing me over? Again, some people will, but most of them likely will not. This is one of the biggest forms of self-sabotage I think I've ever seen. And Trump is getting a lot of pushback from it immediately, like within an hour or two after him making these comments on CNBC. The Biden-Harris campaign, they put it on social media, said not on our watch. So they're already trying to capitalize on this. They're putting it out there in ads. And that is the important thing. We've got to have that kind of rapid response these days. Whenever Trump says something stupid, it should be on TV and Democratic ads the next day. We know we can get that kind of turnaround. We know they've got the money to run these ads all over the place. And they're doing it. I don't have to tell them to get on it this time. They're actually doing it. Because this idea, cutting Social Security and Medicare, there are few things that turn voters off faster than you straight up telling them, I'm going to take your money away. But that is exactly what Donald Trump did this week. Lindsey Graham got into a bit of a tizzy this week during an interview with NBC host Kristen Welker. You see, Kristen Welker decided to ask Lindsey Graham, you know, rightfully so, about Donald Trump meeting with Hungarian authoritarian leader Viktor Orbán last week at Mar-a-Lago. And things immediately got a little testy because Lindsey Graham does not stand for anybody suggesting anything unkind about Donald Trump. So here is how that exchange went down. Welker asked him, do you think Viktor Orbán's leadership is something Trump aspires to do in a second term? And Graham answered, I think the best way to judge President Trump in his second term is by what he did in his first term. Russia didn't invade on President Trump's watch. Hamas didn't try to destroy Israel on his watch. The Taliban weren't in charge on his watch. So here's what I would say. If you're worried about the world being on fire, you're right. If you think Joe Biden's policies lack a deterrence and has weakened us in the eyes of our enemies, you're right. So if you want the world back in order, you better vote for Trump, Lindsey Graham says, completely ignoring the fact that she was like, hey, he just met with a fascist dictator. You know, isn't that an issue? And Lindsey Graham's like, Biden sucks. Okay, you're dancing around it. So Welker comes back. She says, you know, former President Trump has talked about being a dictator on day one. He said it's nice to have a strong man running our country. He's talked about retribution in a second term, Senator. That's when Graham started to get even more angry. He said, you know what he said? Retribution would be success. Did you know who knocked Trump off the ballot in Colorado? Who knocked Trump off the ballot in Maine? There's a liberal jihad against everything Trump. I'm not worried about Trump destroying democracy. I'm worried about Biden destroying the world. Yeah, the guy they call Sleepy Joe is also somehow capable of destroying the world, Lindsey Graham says, in this liberal jihad. So That's a statement. It doesn't make any sense, but it sure is a statement, isn't it? Oh, and by the way, Lindsey, let's go ahead and clear some things up since you don't seem to understand how things work. Who kicked Trump off the ballot in those states? Lawsuits brought by Republican voters. Yeah. You forgot about that part, didn't you? It wasn't the liberals that did it. It was the Republicans who filed the lawsuit that the courts then agreed with. After a little bit more back and forth, including some more questions about Viktor Orbán and Trump's meeting, Lindsey Graham finally blew his gasket altogether and he said, Orbán is not on the ballot. Let's have that debate, okay? Orbán is not on the ballot. You've got to vote between Trump and Biden. Biden has screwed the world up every way you can. Broken borders, the world on fire. If he's really back, if he's with it, if he's energetic, get in a room with Donald Trump and debate. Take questions from people like yourself rather than reading a teleprompter. If there's an election in the history of America that deserved debates between two candidates, it's this election. Trump just told me, his campaign just told me, anytime, anywhere, let's debate. We technically do have presidential debates. Granted, they're coming up, you know, closer to the election. And hey, listen, I'm actually in favor of those two men going at it right now on the debate stage. But Lindsey, you seem to be very confused just really about everything. Because the question you were asked, and of course the question you did not answer, is why is Donald Trump being so cozy with the fascists? Why does he emulate them? Why does he idolize them? That is what you were asked, and instead all you know how to do, because you're not a smart man, was attack Biden using Trump's language that, according to you, like they gave you, like they told you what to say, and you went out there and said it like the good little lapdog that you are. In a truly bizarre post on Truth Social this week, which I could pretty much start any segment ever with that statement. But anyway, in a truly bizarre statement on Truth Social this week, Donald Trump gave himself a new nickname that left the internet howling. Here is what Donald Trump posted on Truth Social in his attempt to get President Biden to debate him. Dean Phillips, who just quit in his hapless campaign against crooked Joe Biden, was not very good at his craft, politics. In fact, I would say that he was far worse than the Republican challengers to me, with a few exceptions. I'll give you those names if you like, but I'd rather get down to the serious business of defeating the worst president in the history of the United States by far, crooked Joe Biden. For the good of our now failing nation, and in order to inform the American people of what is going on in our country, we must immediately have a full-scale debate between Crooked Joe and Honest Don. I'm ready to go anytime, any place. So Donald Trump has now taken it upon himself to give himself a nickname, which, you know, that's not even how nicknames work. Nicknames are supposed to be given to you by your friends, you know, sometimes by the media, and that's usually not a great thing when that happens. But he has decided, I'm going to start calling myself Honest Don, which is, of course, the biggest oxymoron in the history of the United States. That's like me calling myself Farron with the good hair. It's just not accurate. After all, as the Washington Post fact checkers had pointed out when Trump left office, he told 30,000 verifiable lies while he was president of the United States. 30,000 that the fact checkers caught. You know, I'm willing to bet there's a few that may have slipped through the cracks. So at least 30,000 lies while in office. And this man has the audacity to call himself Honest Don. You know, what I have to admire about Donald Trump, because it's such a weird thing, is the fact that he genuinely believes that old saying, you know, if you tell a lie enough, it becomes the truth. So he thinks if he goes out there and he calls himself Honest Don, and he repeats it, and he keeps using Honest Don, Crooked Joe, Honest Don, that everybody's just automatically going to buy it. And the thing is, the people who are going to buy it are the people who already bought into it a long time ago. You're not going to convince anybody that's on the fence right now that you're an honest guy. A majority of people in this country, and these are the polls that people forget about, majority of people in this country believe that Donald Trump should face prosecution. Now, I'm not saying a majority think he's guilty, but a majority think he should face trial for the things he's accused of. And a majority also say if he's convicted, they'll never vote for him. But I don't think there's anybody, and actually new polls this week kind of show that, anybody that's on the fence that think that Donald Trump is Honest Don. That is just absolutely not a thing that ever happened. That is not a nickname anyone would ever give you, unless, of course, they were doing it ironically. And if that's what you're doing then, Donald, then I have to say A+, perfect score there, bud. But if you're actually trying to rebrand yourself as Honest Don, I just don't think that's going to stick with the public at all. And that's it for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire podcast. But for the full show every week, sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com.